Welcome to the second phase of the internationally acclaimed Positive Personal Power Podcast. This webcast is devoted to pillars of success and philosophies of life and the hardcore tools you must have to achieve success in business and life. Distinguished and successful, internationally known business and thought leaders Nathaniel Schooler and Stephen J. Manning give you their hardcore tools to succeed in business and life. Schooler and Manning are as hardcore about success as boot camps in the military and training camps in professional sports. Now, here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Well, I am very privileged today to be joined by Stephen J. Manning. And he is first and foremost, really a storyteller. He's got decades of experience in business. He's an internationally known business leader, author, public speaker, and advisor. He's a founder, CEO, principal, general manager, and board member of a number of enterprises in the US and Europe. And in the marketing world and the business world, he is credited with the origination of prominent creative and empirical concepts, targeting database concepts, media strategies, promotional concepts, incentive devices and channels, and decision-making predictive techniques. All those are widely used nowadays in the marketing world. And well, over the years, he's actually generated $47 billion in revenue of consumer products, services, and consultative endeavors. And he grew a business that was practically on its knees to a $1 billion direct response marketing business, which he has lots and lots of stories to tell us. And I think, you know, this warrants a series. So we are doing the Pillars of Success series here. And it'll be 10 episodes where we dig into some of the most amazing stories that I've actually had the pleasure to hear. So welcome, Steve. It's Stephen. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Ned. I appreciate the kind words. I certainly appreciate the invite. And this is something I've been looking forward to for some time. You're just a super challenging guy, really smart man. And it's a pleasure to spend the hours. It really is.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. So, you know, I mean, a lot of people, you and I, lots of people that we know, we've all struggled to get somewhere in life, right? And we have all of these kind of self-help gurus, all of these people that frankly want to sell tickets to courses and, you know, lots and lots of books and seminars and everything else. And success is a difficult challenge if you are stuck, right? And this is something that I thought would be interesting, is to kind of go over, you know, what the hell do you do? Like, I know you've got the four pillars of success, which is like your master plan to kind of achieve in life. But like, what do you do if you're kind of really stuck in a rut and you want to get somewhere, Stephen?
The reality is that most of us, with the exception of some people that should be institutionalized, do get stuck. The circumstances of our beginnings cause some of that. Our life experiences from very young age cause that. Certainly the environment around us, I mean, political, economic, social, by and large, we live in a tsunami. And in there somewhere, you know, I liken some of that to, you know, you're shoving Jell-O up an incline. And you push up here and it comes back down here, and push here, it comes back down here. And you know you're making progress because you see some stains. The trick is to level that playing field with what you can bring to the picnic, what you're going to bring to the picnic. And that is a very complex paradigm. Something you said in the intro that rings so true for me. There are 1,000 books right now in print on success, how to be successful. And they range from the absurd to the truly absurd, and then ordinary stuff in the middle. And when you get stuck, one of the basic things that you're gonna arrive to, if you want to become unstuck, and that's critical, is that there's a whole industry that thrives on all the pure positive thinking. I liken that to, you're going to go out in the backyard, you stand there and positively think and get really hyped up, and you find out that the lawn is not going to mow itself, you just won't. Wishing it to mow itself, it won't happen. Wishing yourself to be taller, thinner, better looking, richer, it's not going to happen. So the question is, how do you get there? And then how do you get unstuck? And you and I have talked about this. Our audience will forgive us for 5-6 hours, no doubt, maybe more, because it's such a truly complex, very elegant proposition. How do you get unstuck? How do you create success? How do you create success out of failure? All of that. And then what we arrive to, you and I, is that what we have to share is not what you can buy in every supermarket, every end cap has a book on success. No, there are tools like everything else. You have to have tools to accomplish something. You can't fix a car by wishing it to get fixed. You need tools and knowledge and experience and, without a doubt, some degree of work. Some years ago, I wrote a great line which says, lose weight while sleeping. No pills, no fire, no exercise. Okay? So everyone around me said, now there is a winner. Come on, lose weight while sleeping. No diet, no pills, no exercise. Absolute slam dunk winner. We're going to make millions, billions, trillions. The only people that had a problem with that were the lawyers. They said to me, you know, see, that's a brilliant idea, but why don't you just start selling air? It's even better. So the reality is you can't lose weight while you sleep without pills, exercise, or diet. However, you have smart people, and I'm not trying to be nice to you, but you have smart people like you who bring to the fore is, well, that's all fine and dandy, but there are some things you really should do. And not only that, and I think very core to what you and I are talking about is not only you could do, but you can do. And you know what? You will do. So hopefully you all listen to Nat and Steve, because we've kind of distilled down some points that I believe everyone can really relate to and adopt. I call that my pillars of success. In my public speaking life, I do a lot of these shows, interviews, and so on. Of the 20 or 30 topics I talk about, and you already know, I will talk about the mating habits of wallabies if you just ask me. But pillar of success is something I get to talk about every week, couple, three times, because everybody is focused on being more successful. Everybody would like to achieve stuff. I have distilled that down to 4 pillars of success. And I have those on my little teleprompter right here. And that's how I live. Now, I don't know if you want me to define what success really is, or do we get into the master plan? You know, what the pillars
of success? Well, I mean, I think, can I just jump in there? I mean, on the success thing, I think that it depends on what it looks like to you, right? I mean, there's been so much pressure on us since my dad went to MIT, right? His dad went to MIT. My dad lectured at MIT. And when I was a child, he would always shout at me and tell me I needed to go to the best schools and everything else. And, you know, I kind of got expelled from a top boarding school. And I'm not saying, hey, look at me now, I'm the most amazing person. But what I am saying is that a lot of people are wrapped up thinking that qualifications are the way to success. And for some, they are. But actually, without the practicalities of, you know, the doings, theory doesn't really mean anything, as far as I'm concerned. It gives you an understanding of it. But I think that also the biggest thing is, you know, I've accepted that we are not equal. Nobody's equal. I saw a video a few years ago of, you know, a lot of people, they were going running, and then there's a black guy, you know, African-American, and he steps back. Okay, you step back 3 steps. And then there's someone like who's perhaps, you know, got an impediment. Then they have to step back like 5 steps, right? And then someone in a different location lives in a different place. They have to step back. So we're not created equal. But I think at some point in our life, we must take responsibility for where we're heading, for how we're going to get there in a loose sense. And we must take action, and that's daily action. It's not just meditation, which is what a lot of these spiritual gurus that really, you know, frankly get on my wick have been encouraging for the last 30, 40 years, or, you know, 20 years, whatever it is. And success, it must mean something to you, right? Like, is it time to exercise? I do loads of exercise, right? So I exercise, you know, I don't know, 30 hours a week, maybe, right? Some people, exercising to them, it's not that much of a priority. Other people, it is a priority. I think having the choice of what can I do with my time? Okay, how am I going to organize my time so that I can perhaps listen to books when I want to? How am I? And there are many ways to move beyond it. But hey, look, guys, if you're sitting there and you're watching telenovelas all the time, which I love, I might add, and you're sitting there watching junk TV, watching Netflix series back to back, yeah, and then you say, well, I really want to learn this new skill, but I don't have any time, then you're lying to yourself, and you're lying to whomever it is that asked you the question of what you wanted to learn. And I think these things are important. So that's kind of my definition, is being able to do what you want to do when you want to do it. It's not necessarily like having a Maserati or a Bugatti or whatever the hell it is, because frankly, I don't know, I'm not that turned on by the material kind of side of things. It's not a massive driver for me, but other people, it may be a driver for you. I don't know, you know?
Well, you know, you said four different things within the last couple of minutes that I'd like to spend hours on sometime. Perhaps that's part of the commonality, the interest that we had. But, you know, you talk about your father. My father was a bleeding edge, brilliant man who early in his life attained some incredible success, world-class scientist. Died very sick and penniless in Los Angeles, California, because the circumstances of his life changed so fundamentally, and he could not adapt to that. I wish I would have been smart enough, wise enough, which wisdom is a very elusive thing, to feed him my pillars of success as a kid, which did not happen. You know, wisdom is a concept. But one of the things you said a moment ago, which is we're not all created equal. The reality is that one of the almost inexorably stuck points, if you will, in America, is that we have fed generations the concept that we are all equal and we have equal opportunity. Now, as you know, I write about things like CRT and racism and antisemitism, name it, among the 100 things I write about. We have told generations that we're born equal. Thus, we're all going to achieve success together. No, that is one of the awful, awful things that we feed to Americans, particularly. We are not born equal. Now, we theoretically have equal opportunities. But wait a minute now. If you have to start 5 steps behind the other guy, how are you going to catch up? So no, we are not all created equal. And no, we theoretically have equal opportunities, but not really. And that's a major concept that, again, and that unfortunately has fueled and continues to fuel at least 2 or 3 generations of people who are positively victocrats. They're not Democrats, not Republicans, they're nothing. They're victocrats. They're professional victims. And they're mired in this incredible downward vortex, social, political, economic, forever, destruction of the family, all of that. It's like, why can't I have what you have? Well, the reality is you can, but you may have to work that harder than I am, or smarter, or you may have to listen to smart people like Matt Skula, who's going to give you a couple of tools. Says, look, it is the highest form of rocket science. We're not sending rockets in space. We're just asking you to think about how you're going to go about your life. And it's an interesting thing that you and I agreed to talk about pillars of success. And allow me a bit of a digressive comment here, because people define success in many, many different ways. And it's quantitative, it's qualitative, it's wealth, it's education beyond what you were supposed to succeed, whatever it is, physical output that, oh my God, who the hell thought that Nat Skula would run a 4.5-minute mile? the reality is he is. Why? Because he got there. Brawn and brains, he got there. And then I talk about success. You know, let's be clear. For some people, billions of people, success is simply having food and shelter. It's simply subsistence, all it is. You know, and then I will define success as you just did a moment ago. Success for me, the closest thing I get to defining success, and I think it's a very pedestrian concept, quite honestly, is to have options in life, to be able to seek satisfaction in life, in ways I'm able to pursue those and not do that at the expense of others. That is my limited, however unsophisticated, definition of sex for me. So that's, I hope that's what I pursue every day, one way or another. I have my moments without a doubt. A play on words, I have my moments of doubt, to be sure. But that's kind of the way I succeed. And if I have some element of success in my life, a little bit, I know exactly what my pillars of success have been. And you seized on that and said, hey, after talking with me for way too many hours, let's talk about that. Because, you know, sometimes what gives ideas, concepts, constructs tremendous strength is their simplicity. It is so simple. It is a bloody pimple, a million O's. If you can't see it, you're lost, you're hopeless, you should be institutionalized. Quite frankly, my pillars of success are as simple as I can boil them down to. You know what? I have talked to a lot of successful people. And I've talked to an equal number of hyper-successful people who are absolutely miserable and some marginally successful people who are blissfully happy because they define what success is for them. And you know, they all have some things in common. For me, I preach four pillars because I can relate that to the young couple I met in the shopping center yesterday, I told you about, to a group of 250 people who run the insurance companies, and to PhD candidates at a university, and to three universities, honestly. And you know what? I'd be glad to talk about it. That's what you want to talk about.
Well, I mean, I think also we've got to acknowledge the fact that we're all programmed by our environment. We're programmed by what we say to ourselves. We all have a subconscious mind, and we have a lot of programs that are running in the background of that mind. You know, and I know this from experience working with Kim Adele Randall, who's helped me to kind of alleviate these things that I was saying to myself every day. And what really helped me was actually getting a piece of paper out in the morning and writing down what I thought about myself. And actually, you'd be surprised if you've got this negative talk running that it's actually sabotaging you. And you need to really cross it out. You need to surround yourself, in my opinion, by great people and reprogram what on earth is going on. I mean, you know, so do you want to delve into the four pillars of success then now, Stephen, or what do you think?
I would love to. Please stop me, because if you want to, just wave, because I get a little excited. I like waving my arms around a lot. I don't preach. I hope to some extent I teach some, because, you know, it's kind of like, okay, so we're listening to this Manning guy. What does he know? And I will share something very embarrassing with you, and then I'll get into this. A couple of weeks ago, I was in a room downtown L.A. with 120 folks in suits. Now, I'm pretty sure the ladies in the room wore suits, okay? And I was told ahead of time, this is a really buttoned-up downtown executive crowd. And I was talking about success. It's a bunch of people wearing $4,000 suits, you know. It's kind of weird because I'm just an immigrant boy from Romania, you know. At 16, I was penniless and homeless, you know. But and I said something extraordinarily out of character. Some Q&A. We're already well running beyond the time. I mean, we were half an hour way past the dead time and still Q&A. And some dude got up and asked me a question that was so offensive. And just offensive, you know, he had an attitude. And then I said, let me show hands. I said, I've done $47 billion of business doing the stuff I talk about. How many of you have? Anybody else in the room? Anybody else in the room? And the guy said, well, you know, you're right, but. I said, no. And then I said to myself, oh, my God. The sound you hear is my mother in her grave whacking me in the back of my head for having said that. And my father looking at me saying, don't forget where you came from. But you know what? I hope that this thing I relate, it has some gravitas, if you will, instead of just a guy talking. So the master plan, the pillar of success, first of all, I wrote a piece which I think is one of the better things I've written, which is called Power Wards. I expect you read it, but Wards. So I said to myself, first, you have got to leverage the most important word in the language to be successful. What are the most important words in the language, the English language? There are yes, no, and free. Now let's take them backwards. Free. Everybody in advertising marketing has been told by the great brains that the most important word in advertising is free. In fact, in life, but advertising for sure, free. You want to be successful? Free. You don't have to offer free. Really? I said, okay. Back when I was a kid, we had a lot of incentive promotions, a lot of free. Today, can you name an offer that doesn't have a free? You go to a Rolls-Royce dealer and you get free car washes. Now, so we love the free. Everybody wants something for nothing. You know what? Nonsense. The whole free thing is just a feel-good thing. You don't think you're paying for it. It's baked into the thing. Whatever you buy is got a free. It's baked into the cost. In addition to which, the reality is if everything is free, nothing is free. Forget it. It's a cheap idea. Just cheap. Next. All you social scientists, whoever they are, I'm reasonably certain those people have degrees in something, tell you that the most important thing in life, most important word in life is saying no. You need to be able to say no. Really? Okay, the way I see it, the no part is just a cheap proverbial cop-out. No, it's so easy to say no. Ah, now let's talk about yes. The next word that I think is the most important word in the language is yes. Now, the only word for the people who seek success in life and willing to take steps to get there and take some risks is yes. It is people say yes who forge ahead courageously when everybody else finds you to say no. It's yes people who, although afraid of wolves, understand the forest, the business, forest of life is full of wolves. But they do some homework, they give it some thought, and they forge right ahead into that forest, and they find success, not without having done their homework, mind you. And I do about 10 hours of homework. And then when they did that, they thought that through and said, oh, there's wolves in there. Then they put on their big boy pants and big girl pants, and they wade into that and find they identify their goals and pursue those. Just an aside, and you'll forgive me for someday, it occurred to me as I'm talking that I just quoted Stalin, the forest and the wolves. Steve Manning quoted Stalin. Oh, my God. That's an oh, my God moment in my life. That's the second most successful homicidal maniac in the history of the world. I just quoted him in a positive, upbeat thing. Hey, life is full of interesting turns. Next, and this is just many years ago, some years ago, I was running a big company. There was a senior manager in my company whom I did not like in a big way. And I told this woman that if you don't behave differently, we're going to part company in a very big way. Needless to say, she didn't behave differently. One day I said, I'm done. And then there was an opening in my immediate group, my immediate management group, and I wanted to promote from within. This woman shows up in my office. She says, I'd like to go to work for you. I said, you're insane. It's taking me this long to fire you because you work for a guy that works for me. You work for a VP that works for me. So I got to get him to fire you. And so you want to come work for me? You're going to last 12 minutes. I said, no. I said, so why do you want to come work for me? Because you don't consider failure an option. I need to figure out how to do that. My second pillar of success is never consider failure an option. It is absolutely brainless to concede defeat. You wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to give that a shot, but it's not going to work out. My life is not going to work out today because I got all this crap. You do not consider failure an option. If you do, you are proverbially toast. And then the understanding, which you and I talk about, is it's so much easier to fail than to succeed. So I'm going to fail at this. You know what? You have to understand that all successful people fail at things, and they fail often, and they fail remarkably. They fail repeatedly. I mean, some of the most successful people on earth will tell you the massive failures. What they all have in common is that they didn't fail because of lack of convictions or work. They failed because if something was conceptually out of their grasp. One of the smartest guys I know was one of my lawyers for some time. When they looked at me, I was grousing about something. He said, you know, Steve, sometimes things that don't make sense just don't make sense. And you passed the bar in 7 states? You know, this guy was an FTC commissioner. I said, yeah, think about it. I thought about it. All that means is there are things I just haven't figured out yet. They're just out of my grasp for now. But, you know, I also talk about in context of not failing, of leading, you know. You do have 3 options in life. You can lead, you follow, or get out. Go backwards, get out. Is there some point to getting out?
You lead, you follow, and what, sorry?
You can lead, follow, or get out.
Yeah.
Get out. Okay, so you concede defeat before even giving yourself a shot, and you get out. Is there some point to that? Why would you do that? Why would you anticipate failing? What, you're hoping for a great inheritance by 10 o'clock in the morning? Get out doesn't work. Follow. Okay, I think that I don't get the whole follow thing because you become ordinary. You just become ordinary. You can be ordinary? No. Don't follow. No, lead. Now, there is an elegant concept. How do you lead? You lead in business and life. How? You can be a thought leader. Nat Schooler is a thought leader. And the elegant part of that is to get people to not what to think, but how to think. And one of the things you've done in your career is you open the eyes. Imagine this. This is powerful stuff, man. And I'm not trying to be nice to you, but when you talk and you've done all the stuff you've done, the speaking you've done, the writing you've done, imagine the elegant idea of opening people's eyes to eyes and brains to, and ultimately this, whatever this is, to think in a certain way that propels them to get past the stuck points to success.
You know, it's for me, it's feel the fear and do it anyway, right? And you know, I know I've got a friend who's Britain's leading stage hypnotist, and he talks about being in your comfort zone, how you should be in your comfort zone all the time. And it's like, I don't agree with it. I think that you need to do stuff every day that scares the hell out of you, right? Like that for me, like what you just talked about, like in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? If you had the attitude, like the wrong attitude, you're not going to look like, you just get choked, right? Or you get put in an arm bar and then you're like, oh, I can't do it anymore. It's like, do you know how many thousands and thousands of times these
That's
people
the whole point of
exactly
the whole point of following, you know. Thank you, by the way, for the kudos. I had a column published today in a publication, and
oh yeah, well done, I saw that.
Thank you. I mean, but the reason I say this is the title, Business and Political Correctness. and the culture of apology and the oxymoron of modern ethics. Now, the reason I bring that up is because you want to be comfortable within yourself. You know, as a writer, I wrote that thing. Now, the question is, am I going to get a phone call? And I wrote another one 2 weeks ago. When am I getting the email or the letter from American Express saying, we'd rather not have your business? When am I getting the call from Verizon saying, go get another provider? When am I getting a call from AT&T saying, we're thinking about what I'm going to do to you for what you said about us? Now, you want to be within yourself? You want to follow? You don't write that stuff. You put on your big boy pants and write that stuff. And, you know, quite honestly, there's stuff you and I talk about that would be, you want to create a Twitter storm? Let's you and I publish some of the stuff we talk about.
I mean, you know, I'm in the Baltics, right? So I live in Croatia, right? And like the attitude to loads of things is totally different here, right? And it's much more like things were 30 years ago. And you know what? I actually prefer it. I prefer it because there's a straight line. This is how you behave. This is how you don't behave, right? And most people stick within that. And you know, if you step out of line, you're going to kind of get in trouble with a lot of people, right? And the attitude to political correctness is like they say what they want here a lot of the time. And we are in. I mean, this is another conversation altogether. We need to stay focused on the success. But the thing is that there's a very fine line between saying something that is acceptable or not acceptable. And we've all heard this Kanye West stuff. We've watched the videos, we've listened to this guy. And I mean, like, you know, he's clearly, I think, imbalanced. Yeah. So I think we need to be very, very aware that anything we say can be taken out of context and it can damage people's lives it can help them.
Then your challenge is to say all of that and bolster it with all the right background, bolster it with the texture that it requires. You and I are not bomb throwers.
No.
We don't throw a bomb out there and see what happens.
No.
You know, everything I write, I got to pare down. Mm-hmm. Because I'm asked to write 600 words, I start off with 3,000. Because I want to do, and that leads into my next pillar of success. But the reality is that the fundamental point you make about you got to stay within yourself. Let me rephrase that in my perspective. If you're going to jump in an automobile that has 1,000 horsepower, best be within yourself. Best understand what the car does. You're going to kill yourself. Once upon a time, I raced an offshore boat. That is probably the most insane thing an adult can do because driving, it looks so great on TV, you know, those beautiful boats coming out of water.
And it's all dangerous, stuff. Right?
I expect that my 20,000-pound boat would go like this. That's why you lose your kidneys. But the thing that blew my mind is when the manufacturer said, you know, here you go, and handed me keys. And I said, you're insane. He said, why? I said, my camera.
Don't panic.
My camera got tired of me talking. I said, you're insane. The guy said, well, you know, you're not going to believe it. But when we deliver one of these, people can't wait to get in and drive it. Now, you want to get in the boat on the open ocean at 120 knots. And when your margin of error doesn't exist, if you don't trim the thing right, you die. You're insane. But the point still is, so be within yourself in jumping off glaciers. You and I have done that. Be within yourself in driving too fast. But then for intellectual pursuits, business pursuits, being within yourself is totally self-defeating. Hey, I concede defeat before I start. That gig is just too big or too important or too smart.
Hey, man, Steve, if I jumped on my Hayabusa, right, which is a 22-year-old motorcycle, right? And I thought about crashing every time I went out on it. I would crash. There is no doubt I would crash, right? But I have to fight that voice in my head and just say, look, you've been riding bikes 25 years, right? 30 years. 30 years I've been riding motorcycles, right? I have to say, okay, you crashed in the past. You haven't crashed for the last 15 years, 16 years. You're not going to crash. Just stop this. Stop this rubbish. But that keeps you safe. It keeps you safe, right? But the moment where you slightly push beyond, but you're still in control, like that's an exciting space to be, because you're not going crazy. So you're not going to, it's the same thing as probably what you're talking about, I would think.
I think it's, look, it should be intuitive, but it isn't. It's the whole thing about, well, I don't, you push somebody in the pool, they figure out real quick they can swim. They don't have an option. You know, my point, boats, cars, life, business, life is my third pillar of success, which is homework. How much homework do you need to do? When you're done, you need more. And when you're done with that, you need more. And you need exhaustive homework. And you know, I say this all the time, the unhappiest guy in the room when a project goes off well is me. So I know I could have done better. Now, so my bottom line to that is, you have to become a shameless researcher. Now, what does that mean? You can't do enough homework. You just can't. And being a shameless researcher, I am an absolute shameless researcher. I will talk to anybody who will talk to me. As I told you, I once called the Pope early in the morning to ask a theological question. Sounds idiotic, but I did. Amazing, I got to talk to the Holy Father. Well, kind of talk, because I was sweating profusely. I was really confused. And I apologized. I said, first of all, I don't know what to call you. Now, this was a Polish Pope. So I don't speak Polish, but he speaks English and Italian, as did I. So when I'm talking to the guy in Italian, and he said to me, I'm assuming you don't speak Polish. No, I don't, Holy Father. And I said, but, you know, so we're speaking Italian. And they said to me, you know, you want to speak English? I said, yeah. I said, it'd be easier for you, and I get to practice some. I said, okay. And then the first question was, you have to excuse me, Your Holiness, what do I call you? You know, Holy Father, Paul? And I said, the guy said, you can call me anything you want to call me. And I said, that's fine. And I said to you, to be perfectly honest, I'm totally tongue-tied. I don't know what to say. Why? Because I had no expectations of getting you on the phone. I just shut my mouth off last night. I said to some people, hey, I can call the Pope. And at 5 o'clock this morning in LA, I called you, and I speak Italian, I talked to some nice people, and I talked to Cardinal Bertolini, who's your aide, and I convinced him that I was not a crackpot. He said, hey, the Holy Father's sitting here reading newspaper next room, likes to talk to people, let me ask him. And now I'm talking to you. And I said to this nice man, he was a really lovely man, I said, all I can think of right now is to say, hey, how's it going, Padre? And I don't think that's going to work out particularly well. Well, he was still giggling when I said, look, may I call you back when I formulate some thoughts, you know? And the man said, I'll be glad to talk to you. And then he said, now that we know each other, just call back. I said, thank you. God bless you. He said, God bless you. And I said the right things. I said, thank you, Father. We have been blessed. He said, ciao. And he hung up. And I found myself soaked from here to here. I was sitting in a pair of shorts, Nike shorts, at my desk at 5 in the morning. The point, it's a story among a thousand. But then I said, you know, I think that you, to be successful, you become a shameless researcher. Now, oh, really? You know what? The most amazing thing you discover, if you're like me, again, I'm shameless. I mean, not called the Pope. It's a story I love to tell at least once a week. But I'm shameless, because if I think there's a guy in Croatia by the name of Skula who knows something that I'd like to know, I will call. I'll make contact, say, look, you don't know me. I know you. I'm not a crackpot. There's something, you know, I'd like to know. Is it okay if I get on the plane and come visit you for a couple of hours? To which Nat and pretty much everyone I've ever called that way, and there'd be many, many, just say, you don't have to get on the plane to come here. No. I would like to be able to at least have a cup of coffee to treat you. Not necessary. What do you need? What do you want? Most people are absolutely willing to share experience and expertise. It's a combination of a couple of things. Maybe they create a little obligation on your part. Maybe they are altruistic. Most of us love to hear ourselves talk. But if your shameless researcher really dovetails with most people's ability and willingness to share and extend help for you. And, you know, I go back down. I say, you know, oh, how many times am I going to hear this? There's no substitute for experience in the firing line. I have news for you. You're going to get shot 9 times before you get on that firing line. It's you got to get in the trenches. And then you do all that homework, and you talk to people, and read, and write. And, of course, we now have this incredible library in the sky that gets us started. You know, you can scratch knowledge, even on Google. You know,
yeah, you've pointed out that's a very important point, because actually you can pretty much learn about anything you want to learn about, right? You've got thousands of hundreds of thousands of pieces of material. You've got MOOCs, which are free courses from MIT and other universities in the world. They turned 20 years old in the last year from MIT. And those courses are absolutely free. Yeah, they might be a bit old, but you know what? Without a foundational knowledge of something, how are you going to take it to the next level, right? And I watched, I learned something about data science and like machine learning and AI, and oh, it was just the most boring course, but I did it. I put my brain through it because I was like, you know, I have to learn about this stuff, right? Because this is the way the world is going, right? So you have to push yourself, definitely. So onto number four. Are we on number four, or are you?
We are going to number four. By the way, just the bottom line to doing the homework. If you don't do the homework, it's the same as doing having unprotected sex. It's dumb, just dumb. By the way, speaking of homework, it's an interesting paradigm right now today. It's very different than it was just a few years ago. Chatting with this lady who's a relevant person in American business, she does a lot of public speaking, likes, that's her world is that. And she said, you know, you don't bother making a speech unless you can tell stories. Nobody wants to hear all the stuff. You know, I talked about this. I'm supposed to talk about blockchain and NFTs. And then why? Do you want to go to sleep? I'll be glad to do that. But my version of NFTs, of Bitcoin and blockchain, is a 30-minute comedy routine, eventually, ultimately. But what she said was, and it struck me because of what you said, there is no need to pontificate on the bits and the bytes and the boxes and the arrows and this connected that way. No need. Anybody can go to Google and figure that stuff out. Tell a story around that. That will resonate. You know, nobody wants to hear me talk about the concept of power and the perception of power, but hell, they all remember the Croatian hijackers hijacked the Eastern Airlines plane. A story to tell. The fourth pillar of success for me, and this is really simple, and also ties into something you said very early on in this hour, is outwork and outthink everybody else. Now, outthink everybody else. Now, how the hell are you actually going to do that? You're not. But I'll tell you what. If you think you can or you should, you have an incredible advantage. Most people you and I know don't think. Why do you turn the TV on and go to Google? You have to think. You have to think this out. Every day I come up with 2-3 phenomenally new ideas, which unfortunately 2 billion people already know, the new to me. So point is, it's very hard. You do have to make an effort to outthink people. The thing that I find fascinating is when people come back to me and say, I had this light bulb come on. I never thought about this before, but look. There's so many shocking surprises people have. They come in all shapes, sizes, form. You know, I just thought about this for the first time. Now, you may be thinking about something that everybody else knows. But, hey, man, that brain's like your biceps. You just added volume to it. And the last thing in terms of in these pillars is you outwork everybody else. Is that possible? I don't know how to tell you this, but in my world, in my life, for the last 20, 30 years, I know I can outwork 95% of the people because people are just not willing to do it anymore.
Yeah, but it's how bad, it's how bad do they want it, right? Like, it's how badly do they want it? Yeah, they don't want it badly enough to just spend that extra half an hour thinking about what they learned, or spending that extra half an hour listening to a podcast. But the main issue is that they're not in touch with the childish enthusiasm for the topic itself. And this is something that I believe very strongly. I think once you can find that topic that you really want to learn about. Like if you're, for example, say you're an accountant and you're like, well, I really hate being an accountant and I want to be in another business. It's like, well, sure. So go and learn about something that you're interested in and then make that into a business eventually. And this can happen for people, right? But they need to do something. Yeah.
That is something that you and I preach. You need to do something, but you don't jump off a bridge without a parachute.
Exactly.
We have just given our great audience four tools that are so simple, they're so obvious, they're elegant in their simplicity. If you can't figure that, if you can't adopt to that, you just don't want to. And in terms of, again, an example, perhaps a little self-serving, your friend who said, I don't have time for that, when am I going to do that? Listen, I wasn't exactly sitting here twirling my non-existent hair, reading yet another book, when you and I connected again, and in short order, we went from talking for 10 hours over days or a couple of weeks to you and I are going to write an absolutely spectacular book.
I'm excited about this book.
Now, it's titled 43 Things You Need to Do to Get Out of Your Own Way to Success. Now, the question is, do I have time for that? Oh, hell yeah. Do I have the option to not do that? Are you kidding? We are going to write an absolutely spectacular spellbinding book that I will wager the farm, which I don't have. I'll wager the farm that when somebody reads that book, they walk away energized, they walk away feeling empowered. Oh, I'm sorry. I just use a new age term, empowered. Oh, screw that. I don't even know what that means. But they walk away
motivated.
Feeling.
Should we try?
I'm absolutely capable of doing that. You're damn right, yeah. I can do that. But what do I have to do that? Well, you know what? I can't run a 4.5 minute mile like Matt does. I got to lose 20 pounds to do that. You know what? It's worth the sweat to run that mile. We were creating those relationships between you wake up in the morning and you have a plan and you execute when everyone else you know says, nah, I'm tired. I got other things to do. I don't have time. Listen, in a 24-hour day, I need this many hours of sleep. You do. I need this much time to chase my wife around. And I need this much time to do things like shower a couple times a day and eat. And the rest of that, I can think of a greater high than producing some great stuff that make me feel good about validate my life. And you and I will create an enterprise. What it does is it takes those cherries in the bowl, highlights the cherries, and tells people the pits are necessary. This is what you do with them, borrowing from Irma Bumbach, you know, whom I don't like that much, but that was a great line, bowl full of cherries. How come I get all the pits? The reality is, no, we all get pits, and then we all get cherries. We need to figure out what to do with both of them. Anyway, I'm not plugging a book that we're writing. But I think it's an example for me to say, you know, I don't have time. Okay, here's 9 reasons for me to say no. No, I got one to say yes. I think that's one spectacular freaking idea. And I know what I'm going to get out of it. Same. I know what I'm going to feel about having done that. I believe as I sit here talking to you, it'll be a triumph. It'll be triumph.
Oh, absolutely.
That massive books that people are writing. And then
absolutely.
You and I give away, sell 500,000 copies of that. And we got 3 letters, 3 emails from people saying, you changed my life. That's a triumph of massive proportions.
But let me be
our new book, although it's not in print yet.
But let me be absolutely clear, right? I literally, when I was at school, after I got expelled from one of the top 10 boarding schools in the UK when I was 14, I thought the world had absolutely ended, right? Like my mum and dad, my dad was like so, like he was crazy angry, right? Like he was like, he was just insanely crazy angry, right? Like,
you know,
like smoke from his ears. I was really bad. And then I went to the next school and my English teacher, he basically bullied me in every single class, this guy. And he was called Captain Morgan. And to the amusement of my friend Marin, my Croatian friend, this guy used to basically say to me, he would say, "You're going to be cleaning bloody toilets, boy," and that's what he would say to me. And I have fond memories of Captain Morgan. He's probably long dead by now, I'd think, or at least be 90 years old by now, I would think. But the thing is that, you know, I didn't actually write anything that I really was proud of reading that was actually hugely exciting until I read a book by Seth Godin. Someone recommended I read The Icarus Deception by Seth Godin, which is basically like about telling your story and then the people who want to read it and want to know about your story and you will buy into you, right? And then I started writing blogs, and you know what, they were messy and they weren't that good, but there was always an underlying bit of passion that I felt for writing these blogs. And then eventually, and then like 4 years later, IBM hired me to write blogs for this Think Marketing blog that they had. They paid me like $1 a word, right? I was like, wow, they're paying me $1 a word to write this, right? And it's like, but I still wasn't writing that well, right? And I've only just started to get better at writing when I found people like yourself who I consider one of the best writers. I don't like to flatter you too much, right? Because your ego could get out of control. But
more.
No. But I think that if you want to learn something and you really want to get good at it, you've got to play with the best in the world, right? Like if you want to learn jiu-jitsu, right, and you go and roll around with a bunch of people who, and the teacher isn't that good and whatever, you're not going to learn anything that's that valuable, right? And you might get injured. And it's the same with learning new skills. Any new skill, if you want to learn something new, you've got to find someone who is at the top of their game in whatever it is, or has been at the top of their game in that particular skill, right? If you want to learn to ski, or you know, or to ride motorcycles, or go and do boxing, or whatever, a lot of people, they might not even do that sport anymore, but they can give you some information that's going to help you to become better, right? Never compare yourself to who you were before, and never compare yourself to your peers and your friends, right? Because you need to always move forwards, you know?
I would like to, I'm going to add into my little mental notes on pillars of success, something you just said. Never compare yourself to your former self. What exactly is the point? I think that fits entirely into my narrative on pillars of success. You compare yourself to your former self, you just accept a defeat. What exactly?
But can I stop you there? You can still look back at yourself. I mean, I just shaved my beard, right? And the last time I shaved my beard, well, it must have been, I don't know how many years ago, right? I forget how many years ago, but it was, you know, it was a few years, right? And actually, I feel good about how I look now compared to how I looked back then. I'm healthier, I eat better, I have more sun, I train more. There is occasion when you can, but you can't dig into that too much because you're a new person now, right? So it's an interesting, what would you call it? Is it a dichotomy? I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for. There's a word for it, right? I'm not quite sure what that word is.
I'm recently stuck on the word paradigm, but that doesn't mean anything.
Paradigm is a good word, yeah. It's a good word. But I think, you know, on on the next episode, because we're doing a series here of 10 episodes. On the next episode, I wanna hear the story about what you did when you fired two levels of management from the company, and how you flipped that company on its head, because you had warehouses, you had like what, a million square feet or more of production?
3 million.
Right, 3 million square feet with conveyor belts, with cutting equipment, printing equipment, boxing, you know, all stuff that I'm totally geeky about anyway. I love that stuff, right? Like production is, but I love the way that you basically explain how, why you fired these people, and actually it improved the business hugely by getting rid of those people that in essence they weren't grateful for their jobs, right? Because gratefulness, in my opinion, gratefulness is the most important thing if you want to progress. Because if you're not grateful, what you have may get taken away anyway, right? Like you might be like, well, I'm really grateful. Well, you're not really, are you? Because you don't really think, you know, you're happy that you have something, right? But the moment you become dissatisfied, you're probably going to start destroying what you do have. And this is also, in my opinion, a big, big thing that I think we'll dig into in these next interviews as well, you know, Stephen.
I promise you my pleasure entirely.
Thanks for watching and listening to Positive Personal Power Podcast. Get access to all our podcasts and other important updates on www.legacymediahub.com and subscribe wherever you listen and watch your podcasts on the Legacy Media Hub YouTube channel.